This week, we're discussing where new infections come from and how to get rid of them. One way that new viruses can appear is if scientists create them in the laboratory. Researchers often genetically modify organisms in order to discover how they work and how they cause disease at a molecular level. And famously, a few years ago, researchers in the Netherlands and the US made forms of H5N1 influenza, or bird flu, that had a 70% fatality rate and the ability to spread very efficiently between mammals, including us humans. So should we be scared? And should this even be allowed? To discuss, we're joined by Philippa Lentzos. She's an expert on biosecurity from King's College London. So Philippa, can you explain to me what were the scientists doing here and why on earth were they doing it?
Hi Kat. Well, broadly what these two labs were trying to do was to understand the factors that determine the ability of animal viruses to spread to humans. So what they did was to mutate the H5N1 bird flu virus to make it airborne and transmissible to mammals. And as you said, including humans.
So it's not normally, it doesn't normally travel in the air, but they made it so that it could survive in the air and get from animal to person.
Exactly right. And that mutated virus was highly virulent and as efficiently transmitted as a common cold.
Now, that sounds like a bad thing to be doing. Why on earth did they even want to try and do this?
Well, I mean, this is part of, a lot of this is part of basic science. New and emerging infectious diseases are also considered some of the biggest threats to national security. But we're unable to predict which specific virus subtype will trigger the next pandemic. So it's really in order to address the knowledge gap and to understand flu transmission, aid detection, prepare vaccines, that sort of thing.
So effectively, they were trying to make stuff in the lab that could have happened in real life to work out, OK, can we figure out what might these viruses be like if they do arise in the real world out there?
Exactly right. They were figuring out or trying to work out what might happen in the future and how we would then respond to that.
So this does sound quite risky, though. How risky is it? Is there a chance that these kind of things could escape? Almost you get the impression of a mad scientist in their lab going, I'm going to make a killer virus. What are the controls and the checks and balances here?
There certainly are a number of risks against this, you know, and enhanced viruses, as you said, could be accidentally released. They could also be intentionally released from a lab. In that sense, they would potentially expose the surrounding populations to pandemic pathogens.
What are the kind of mitigations against this? It just bothers me a little bit to know that researchers are building these things in labs. How are they protected?
Well, currently they work under biosafety containment precautions, but in response to the experiment we were talking about, the H5N1 experiment that was done a few years ago, what happened was the scientists broke the news pre-publication, pre-review in the media, and it was met with substantial alarm from the scientific community.
Yeah, not surprising.
No, I mean, the New York Times went with the headline, an engineer doomsday. This was really a big deal. The advisory body in the US that was looking at this advised against publishing the methods section because that might give information to people who would misuse it.
Nefarious people. And then I understand that then funding was stopped for this kind of research. I mean, where are we now with attitudes towards actually doing and funding this kind of research?
Initially, there was a self-imposed voluntary moratorium by the scientific community on this. That was lifted in 2013. That then became entangled with, you know, safety concerns. And there were a couple of high-profile lab safety breaches at the time. And eventually, the US government stepped in October 2014 and pulled their funding on this gain-of-function research of concern. So it was a particular subtype of gain-of-function research that they pulled their funding on, and they started this deliberative pause. And that's what we're coming to the end of now.
So there's a debate, I understand, happening in Washington this week to say, so should we do this? How do we go forward? What's going on there?
Well, the debate is really about risk assessment of this gain-of-function work and about who should be making those assessments? Should it just be scientists? Should it be their institutions? Should it be funders? Should it be publishers? Or much more broadly, should it be regulators, vaccine manufacturers, ethicists? You know, these are big questions.
Because I guess we've always got to balance the benefits of finding out how these viruses could potentially happen and work with the risks that we might accidentally cause a pandemic. So should researchers be allowed to do this?
Well, there will be cases where the risks outweigh the benefits. And there are experiments that simply should not be done.
What kind of things would that be?
So, for instance, making Ebola airborne, making influenza viruses resistant to vaccines or antivirals. So I think we need clear red lines about this. And we need a regulatory framework that also applies to the military and to commercial sectors, and that isn't just limited to those in receipt of NIH funds, which is the current situation in the United States.
Thanks very much. So certainly one to debate for the future. That's Philippa Lentzos from King's College London.
Certainly food for thought.